This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Tuesday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing, taking your calls on our KFH hotline at 869-1240. We can take your comments on our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. Appreciate everybody for hopping on with us here as we find a groove again, or at least we'll go down swinging. It's been a minute since we've been on. We have a lot to catch up on. We'll do it. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, will join us in the next segment. We have, that's it for guests today, but we've got other things to catch up on. We'll catch up on some of the other things happening around the sports world, the big headlines. If you missed anything on the Royals, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Speaking of Shocker baseball tonight on KFH, Wichita State's on the road in Lawrence. They'll face KU. You can tune in right here on KFH. 1 o'clock, Shockers at KU, or download the Odyssey app. At Odyssey app, you can listen to this show. You can listen to live programming, including that Shocker baseball game, which is, it starts at 6 o'clock, 5:45 coverage begins here on KFH. So a lot of interesting stuff there too. Tommy, Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. Let's touch on that real quick. I wouldn't say it's a huge like headline type year for us, but Bob Lutz is in. Of course, former host here for years on KFH. His work with League 42 has, you know, been transformative for the Wichita community. So that's a really cool thing to see him go into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. They're going to honor Mark Mangino this year because he couldn't be there last year. Anything else stand out to you with this Kansas Sports Hall of Fame class?
Really, those two. I mean, big shout out to Bob Lutz. You know, anybody who has lived here for any length of time, you know, when he was writing for the Wichita Eagle, you know him. And I grew up reading his columns and, you know, had the opportunity to work with him, you know, here at KFH for a few years and what he's done with League 42. There's been, you know, several different seasons of Bob's career, whether we're talking about columnist, reporter, on-air talent, talk show host, and then, you know, nonprofit president and CEO. All of it surrounding sports in this community, in this state. Well-deserved for him. And then Mark Mangino, you know, I think in retrospect, knowing the positive momentum and all the success that he brought to Kansas football, and then contrast that with the way the program fell apart when he was unceremoniously removed at the University of Kansas, well deserved for him as well. And then there, you know, there are other inductees also, but really those two guys stand out to me.
I agree. Congratulations to Bob and everybody that's in the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame class. Another story I want to get to real quick here before we get Felix Johnson next is, man, this Nico Iamaleava, and I hope I'm maybe butchering the name there, but good player, Tennessee last year. This thing has been a mess, and it all has happened, and I've been trying to follow it remotely, and it's been crazy, and he broke up with Tennessee, and I don't know how much anybody cares about the specifics of Tennessee's quarterback becoming a free agent other than the bigger picture of how this all, you know, has been reported to play out with basically like some people describing it as a shakedown from a player and representatives and, you know, numbers like $4 million being thrown around. And I mean, as a redshirt freshman, he was good, Tommy, but I got to tell you, like, I mean, I don't know if you're if we're going to treat this like professionalism, which it is, of course, and I'm Tennessee and I got a lot of players to play to pay. Like, I don't know that I don't think Tennessee. I think they're fine. OK, if that's what you want, go get it somewhere, because he won't. He's not going to get that kind of money out there from anybody. So good luck. Like, we'll see you later and it'll be a hard lesson learned. But. You know, until you have contracts when guys can do this, like, all right, go for it. It was, I don't know what else to say.
It was really a non-story for me, honestly. And I know that it was a big deal was made of it, you know, when it all went down, but it was a non-story for me because there's nothing prohibiting this from happening now in the world of college football. And to your point, yeah, I guess if he wants to hold out and leave the program and not be a quote unquote team player, I guess that's your prerogative. Go and try to find it somewhere else, I suppose. And if I'm Josh Heupel at Tennessee, I'm like, you know what? Don't let the door hit you on the way out, man. You know, like we'll go figure it out elsewhere. And, you know, if you don't want to be all in with us with the amount of money that we're investing in you, then yeah, we don't want you on the team. Things like this are going to continue to happen until there are contracts, until there are buyouts, until there are things, you know, that can hold the players' feet to the fire, because we always compare what coaches can do compared to players. We always, you know, take a look at what the way that coaches are able to bounce around and blah, blah, blah. But one thing that coaches have are contracts and coaches have buyouts. And it's not like they're just going to up and leave a school, you know, without there being contractual negotiations one way or the other. That's not the way that it is for players right now. I think that's where we're headed. I think that's where we'll be, but we're not there yet.
I think this one is a little more like we see this in basketball. We have seen this in basketball more frequently, I think, than football for star like headline making players. There have been a lot of big high profile opportunity transfers in football, right? Like a player leaves for an opportunity. We just saw Will Howard. Congratulations, by the way, to Will Howard on his trip to the White House yesterday. Because he was able to find an opportunity that made sense for both sides. Like, we've seen that in college football forever, but this is probably the most high profile, because Arch Manning stuck around with Quinn Ewers, right? That would have been probably the best chance for this. But like, if a player, you know, because in college basketball, this is happening, right? Players are leaving just because they think they're going to go make more money somewhere. And they kind of are. We haven't seen it, I don't think, as much in football like this. And okay, like, go for it. Like, at some point, you know, universities also have to treat this like a business. And they have to start valuating players based on how much money they're worth, right? If you think, I'm trying to compare, like, Nico's trying to be, he's trying to present himself, it feels like, like if he were coming off of, I don't know, Jaden Daniels Heisman Trophy year. Like, what are you trying to prove here? By like, because that's not going to work over time. Like, that will stop pretty quickly. It's going to be performance based, and redshirt freshmen doing this, like, teams aren't going to do that. Because if you're Tennessee, would you rather pay And I know the timing of this one is the most annoying probably for fans, but let's say you're Tennessee in a normal offseason and Nico pulls this and it's everything's equal and you can pay $4 million for him, or let's call it $1.5 million for Will Howard going into next season. And dollars and cents matter, right? We know, we've learned, we have a good perspective. Letters like Kevin saw, like, here's how much money. Like, when you know there is actual, basically, a pool of money that can be used, which way would you go if you were Tennessee? I'm going to go with the senior.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the experience. I'm going to go with the proven commodity. Even if that proven commodity ceiling may not be quite as high, if you're investing real dollars into it, I'm going to go with the proven commodity every day of the week. You know, this is one area where college football is different than the NFL and will always be different than the NFL, is that you don't have 10, 15, 18 potentially years to have a franchise quarterback in your program. You have a max of 4. I mean, maybe a little bit more depending on red shirts and, you know, things like that. But the maximum length of time that your franchise quote-unquote quarterback for your program can be there pales in comparison to the number of years that a franchise quarterback can be with an NFL team, especially if they're coming out of the NFL draft. And, you know, look at Mahomes and the Chiefs and how, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots, like the length of time, the shelf life is a lot longer, and it always will be in the NFL. So knowing that, college programs have to go with the proven commodity, I think, because you don't have the luxury of time to have a project or to have somebody with a lot of upside, but, you know, not the amount of time to develop them into a proven commodity, especially these top tier programs, the programs that, you know, are probably perennial CFP type teams. I don't think you're going to see a lot of situations where you've got, you know, an Arch Manning type situation where they're coming in out of high school and you're developing them over time. I think when teams are looking at going to the portal to find a quarterback, you're going to go with the guy that you know is proven. And that's absolutely the reason why Ohio State went with Will Howard. Like, they went with the proven commodity.
And two, like, if you're Tennessee, okay, you get, what happens next offseason? You can do this again.
Exactly.
Like, Tennessee, he could not, like, they could not do this. And I also don't want to unfairly put Nico and Arch in the same conversation because circumstances matter. Arch Manning's money's never going to be an issue for Arch Manning, no matter how much he makes playing football. So that's not the same to compare him to a lot of these kids either, because, yeah, he can afford to be more loyal. Not that he's not getting paid. He's getting paid handsomely to some reports more than any other player. So that it's just a situational thing is all it is. Like, this was never going to work at Tennessee. So will somebody pay him $4 million? I doubt it. I doubt it gets that high, but we'll see. We'll come back. Felix Johnson joins us to talk a little football as far as the Kansas City Chiefs. That's next on Sports Daily.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And yes, it is. It's Felix Johnson with us, our Chiefs Insider, Field Vision, Arrowhead Addict, lots of great stuff. Felix, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Jacob, how are you doing this morning?
We're good. We're glad to be back. Yeah. Tommy and I have both been on some adventures, so a little back to reality today. It's early for my body, which is time zone. Now we're at 3 a.m. from what I'm used to, and I just went outside to help the kids get on the bus, and it's colder here than in Hawaii. So there's a few things kind of smacking me in the face here this morning, but we're glad to have you in. We're getting closer to the NFL draft. I want to get to the draft in a little bit, but you've sent me a couple of things that you guys have been working on at Field Vision, and we can start there. Position groups. You've been evaluating position groups. You've been taking this league-wide. I think for us, like the big questions for me, especially when it comes to the defensive line, to the secondary, where are the Chiefs falling in these groups, and how has that process helped you maybe understand what their goals in the draft need to be?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, and we've talked about it a handful of times over the last couple of weeks where the Chiefs sit at. It's kind of interesting when you look at their unit rankings, they're not exactly in the top tier of anything, really. Like it's kind of they're not the best. They don't even have the best quarterback when it comes to the advanced metrics and different things like that. So if you look at their secondary, it seems like they would have the best corner in Trent McDuffie, or at least one of the top three. And colloquially known, he is one of those guys. He is a first team all pro. He is that guy. You'd think that Chris Jones is the best defensive tackle in football. And he is, but not due to the advanced metrics, because the guy doesn't like breaking double teams on run defense, just because why, when you're Chris Jones, you got a lot more stuff to do in January and February. So who cares about what's going on in September? So I think it's kind of interesting when you look at different things like that, because the Chiefs are obviously phenomenal in everything, just made it to three straight Super Bowls, winning two of them. But in each individual spot, they're kind of average when you look at the advanced metrics. Like their secondary is about the 12th or 13th in the league. Their defensive line outside of Chris Jones is pretty decent, but outside of Chris Jones, what do you have? And their guys relying a lot on what Chris Jones does, sucking up double teams, getting a lot of attention. And then you get your George Karloftis's, your Charles Amenahu's, your different guys making big plays like that. So the Chiefs overall, their roster seems kind of average, but at the same time, we've seen the proof and the results that no, they're pretty good.
We are fast and furious in a position where, you know, people are doing mock drafts left and right. I mean, mock draft season is ramping up big time, and it has been for a while, but especially now as we get to the final couple of weeks before the draft. It's interesting because I feel like as of late, maybe the last week or so, a lot of the prominent mock drafts that I've looked at, I feel like more of them are shifting over to the thought of potentially a wide receiver in the first round for the Chiefs. And that may not ultimately be the direction that they go, but I'm seeing more and more mock drafts are looking at wide receiver at the end of the first round. How likely do you think that is for the Chiefs to use another high round draft pick for the third year in a row on a wide receiver?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting where we look at the Chiefs and say, yeah, their offense isn't what it used to be, but then they've made it to three straight Super Bowls, and so it doesn't really matter. But then in the third Super Bowl, they looked as bad as they did and looked inept offensively, and we know that they're not going to do anything philosophically different, where Andy Reid is going to be Andy Reid probably until he retires. Matt Nagy is probably not going to change anything massively. Even if he has any crazy ideas that are coming through, Andy Reid is still the final play caller. Patrick Mahomes is still going to figure out ways to win games at the very least. And so how do you make that offense more effective if you're not going to do anything, change anything massively, like from a play caller standpoint? You got to get those weapons. You got to go out and get guys. And when you don't have the money to do so in free agency, you can't go trade for T. Higgins, and obviously he was going to re-sign with the Bengals. You can't go out and make these big trades that we've seen other teams make, like for a DK Metcalf going to the Steelers this offseason, and we've seen receivers make moves over the last handful of years. They have to make the moves in the draft because these are the only places they can make the moves. So I think that, to me, they have to, but in all likelihood, we've talked about it here, they're probably not even going to draft in the first round because it's the Chiefs. They'll probably just trade out and see something crazy happen. But who knows, because it's Brett Veach and he doesn't like to show his card until it's time to play.
Yeah, it does feel like philosophically that's the part where I feel like they have options. If they're going to trade up, we've talked about left tackle. If you were going to go all in there, this is a good year to do it, because they basically were able to run it back, right? Which none of us expected that, I don't think, when this offseason started, but that's what they've done. Like, they're running it back. So what can you do to add? And if you think about, okay, what do you do to beat the Eagles? If you're going to run it back, like, what do you do to need to get over that last hump? It's probably make the offense better. Yeah. I get it. I get why they're getting mocked there. I don't think they're going to. We talk about rushing it. I just pulled this up. And this is to your point, Felix, like, it does feel to me like there were years in there where the Chiefs with Kareem Hunt sort of in his prime, or, you know, whatever, like, that they ran it more. They ran it more last year than any year in the last 10 more mm-hmm. times attempts per season. Like, they ran the ball more last year than any of the last 10 seasons. So I think this notion that maybe they will, or they're not going to. Right. That was as much as we're going to get out of that. So adding a receiver, again, like, I understand why people think that's what they're going to do. I just don't know, like, where does that even fit if you go at a wide receiver right now, when you brought back Hollywood Brown, when you brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, and you have Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy now and Travis Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you're taking a player in the first round at that position, that doesn't really, like, how does that player even help? Unless they get Rashee Rice news in the next 10 days.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you, but it kind of goes back to the conversation of where else. Like, I mean, if they want a left tackle, they're going to have to trade up within the first half of the first round to get a guy that's worthy of starting in week one. You can hope for a Walter Nolan to fall to you at 31, or some defensive interior, maybe Derek Harmon from Oregon dropping down, an edge rusher. We've talked about that too. So it's about who's going to fall to you in the spots that you need. they're not going to have a left tackle, the best one in the draft, or somebody that's going to be able to start week one at 31. That's just not, in all likelihood, not going to happen unless something catastrophic happens or they trade up like we've talked about. And so to me, it's like, if you get to 31 and the only option is to draft a wide receiver that has a chance of helping you in the, on week one, maybe even week three, because we know wide receivers in this offense that we've seen over the last couple of years, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, that these guys aren't going to get it week one. It might take 6, 7, maybe 8 weeks. And by that time, Rashee Rice might be back or coming back from his suspension. So it's kind of hard for me just to say, yeah, go ahead and go draft a receiver for what you're saying, Jacob, but also who else are they going to? Like, I mean, they can draft a defensive interior lineman, but is it going to be a guy of quality that's worthy of using the 31st overall pick or a tackle? Because they've spent X amount of draft picks over the last handful of years on offensive tackles too. So are they going to waste another pick on that position again? And that's an even less productive, I guess, at least to the eye position than another left tackle.
Let me ask you both this then, to sort of follow that. I get, like, no matter who they take there, it may not be somebody that jumps in immediately. I'm okay with that. Like, I can even accept that, whether they trade it up for left tackle. But even if you look, like, big picture of all the potential issues that are coming, wouldn't wide receiver not be, like, they've got Rice and Worthy. No matter how much Rice plays this year, like, that's not a position of need, not only this year, but that's not going to be a position of need at least for 2 years. Yeah. That's like, if you go take an interior defensive lineman or a pass rusher or a left tackle and they don't contribute a ton this year, they're going to need them to next year. So at least it makes more sense that way.
Well, and then the price tag gets driven up on all these players. But if they don't play in, like, I think if a pass rusher doesn't play year one and then he's good for 2 years, you end up in like George Karloftis situation where he's going to be asking for $100 million in a year or two. So with a defensive end or a defensive or a pass rusher in general, interior or on the edge, you're kind of running into the issue of this guy is going to be worth the second most of anybody on your team. And so that's the problem that you run into. If you have a fleet of receivers, I think you kind of – it's not a problem, but kind of like what the Packers have going on where they have like five guys and they need a number one. I think if the Chiefs had five guys, it'd be like, oh, here we go. Let's see where they're at. And so I think that's where the league is kind of heading. And unless you have a Justin Jefferson or a Puka Nacua or somebody like that in your wide receiver room, you kind of have to have a wide receiver by committee unless we have – Rashee Rice news in the next 10 days. And so I think that's why this draft pick is so pivotal, if you will, because of what you're saying, where they can draft defensive line, edge rusher, secondary, or they can go left tackle or wide receiver. And it could point us in the direction of like saying, oh, this is where the Chiefs are looking at, where they're more worried. But in what you're saying, they can win the Super Bowl next year. And they can draft a receiver in the first round, and he can be a bigger piece of winning the Super Bowl this coming year, as opposed to any other pass rusher, edge, whatever the case may be, for a guy coming that may not play for another year or two. So that's where I think the Chiefs are. They're trying to win now. They need contributors now, and the only way to do that would be getting a receiver early.
But don't you think, too, and you mentioned George Karloftis a minute ago, let's just say hypothetically with pick 31, they go edge rusher. Mm-hmm. That's if they do something like that, and there's probably a couple of other examples also. To me, that signals that they're not gonna re-sign George Karloftis. Like, it's more of a, hey, we need to have not even a backup, but we need to have a future plan for once that contract, you know, gets large enough and free agency hits that, you know, we're not going to be able to afford that. We need to have the succession plan, you know, for somebody like a George Karloftis. And again, there might be, if they go cornerback, that might be the thought process as well. There's probably a strategy in place where they feel like, hey, let's look ahead a little bit because we're not going to be able to keep everybody. They never are.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And that absolutely has to play into what they're doing, planning as a franchise. And obviously we've talked about it here. Patrick Mahomes is going to be 30 this year. So there's still a longer runway for this team than just the last 3 years or the next couple. So I think that what you're saying is absolutely right, but right now the window's open now and you don't know when it slams shut. And with a guy, I mean, obviously this isn't the end all be all, but this is where my brain goes immediately. The Kansas City Chiefs have a guy like Travis Kelce coming back for one reason, and that's to win the Super Bowl next year. Everything has to be pointed in that direction, and obviously everything is. And so I don't think that necessarily that's the conversation going into place where, oh man, George is going to be coming up here in a year or two, so let's make sure that we have a succession plan, which absolutely, it's going to be a plan. It's going to be something that we look at and that they're looking at, that their scouts are probably looking at. But right now, I think that the focus is on let's win the Super Bowl next year. We have guys coming back specifically to win the Super Bowl next year. If we're not pointed in that direction, what's the point?
It's. I mean, you said they could, you know, they could draft a punter and win the Super Bowl next year, right? Like they were a team that got stronger as the season went on that had a bad game in the Super Bowl. It doesn't, and that's why I always like think of this pick as like. I think it's going to be a pass rusher. I still think it's going to be a pass because I think that helps them the most now and in the future. I just don't know how a wide receiver helps this team if Rashi Rice plays. I don't.
And I really think it depends. I think if you allow Andy Reid more creativity, like if he's not going, excuse me, my dryer's going off. If Andy Reid is allowed to be more creative with more weapons just in general, then sure, don't run the football. Like if you're not going to run the football as effectively. Now we've talked about how they've run the football more often, but it's not as effective. Like I was looking here, they're pretty incredible in 21 personnel, but how often did you see two backs on the field for the Kansas City Chiefs? So it's really frustrating to see them not run the football, but if they're not, or excuse me, not run the football as effectively as they could, but if they're not going to give Andy Reid another incredibly athletic piece, like, I don't know, Luther Burden or who, like whatever the case may be, give Andy Reid another chess piece to figure it out, because we've seen Andy Reid with various amounts of chess pieces figure it out.
I don't disagree with that sentiment. I don't know. How do they play? How does he even, what were you going to run five receivers? You're going to run five receiver sets. Now, again, maybe they have an indication of something on Rice. Like if you're going to tell me that Rice is going to miss like eight games and you know that's happening, but you don't know when, okay. Because I think what you don't want is what happened last year. Hollywood Brown goes down. Rice goes down. Now you've got to go pick dudes up, literally pick them up off the street or trade from them. I get it from that perspective. I do. And that does make some sense.
Well, and I'll even add on to the fact of like, you don't want to miss on the succession plan. Like if you draft an edge rusher or whatever the case may be, a Walter Nolan at 31 and Chris Jones is gone in 2 years or whatever the case may be, you wasted not only that first round pick, you got to use it again to rectify that pick. And if you have an edge rusher, a needed edge rusher here in a couple years, and you use that pick on an FAU a couple years ago and whomever you draft this year, and both guys aren't as good as you wanted them to be, well, then you got to use another pick on an edge rusher, probably early, probably trading ahead. So there's so many different scenarios. And obviously Brett Veach is going through all of them with every staff member, but these are the things that are going on, because you don't want to miss on any pick, let alone one that is not going to prove itself for a year, maybe two.
Yeah, no, I agree. All that work, all the, you know, insight you could need, Felix has you covered. Look for those positional reports. If, you know, kind of get some indication there at Field Vision, of course, has us covered at Arrowhead Addict as well. So this time next week, we're going into the draft. So we can make predictions. We can have all kinds of fun, because that's it. Like that's it. The draft is sneaking up on me. I don't know about you two, sneaking up on me more than I think it ever has before. Like it's going to get here and we'll be like, whoa, it's draft season. Yeah. Last year we had it in Kansas City and all that stuff. It's in Green Bay. We don't really know what's going to happen. Like
there's no quarterbacks. It's kind of a sad class. Last year we had six quarterbacks going in the first 12 picks, and this year we might have two going in the first nine, maybe. And so that's most of what you can judge how quality a draft class is. I put air quotes around it for our radio audience, but it's you never really, if the positions aren't sexy, nobody's going to look. It's one of those things where like it's just fine. Tet McMillan's getting some love, but he's Drake London. Like he's that's fine.
Yeah.
Like he's the biggest baller in the weapons part of the draft. And even then, it's like, all right, cool. So and like Cam Ward, his comp, Geno Smith. Woohoo. Nah.
Shadur. Team or Shadur over whatever. Here. Let's go. He's Baker Mayfield Jr. is who that is.
Yeah.
Just watch. All right. Congrats. Felix, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
There goes Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. If you joined us late, missed any of it, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. It's not that I'm not excited about the draft. It's just sneaking up on us. To me, anyway. I don't know if that's a product of the transfer portal. I don't know what it is, but like it is sneaking up.
I think it's simply because the class is not great. I mean, from top to bottom, there are going to be diamonds in the rough for sure. But from a premier, top level, I'm not excited about it at all.
We're catching up. Tommy, you ever do a red eye flight? I don't know
It's
been a long time. We did one of those before last night. We hadn't slept since Saturday overnight into Sunday. And then, you sleep for 30 minutes, an hour, whatever on the plane. That's a wild, it's been a long time doing that. I mean, we traveled for 15 hours without sleeping between.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I kind of like the flight back from Hawaii better than I like the flight out to Hawaii, because you basically fly that same distance, but then you have to keep your day going because you basically are going back in time with the time zone changes and all that. I'd rather, just for me, fly through the night and try to sleep as much as I can on the plane. But that's just, that's kind of me, I guess.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. It was just it's a time warp. It's a weird time warp because we don't you're already we also did it with three kids, which they were pretty much rock stars on it. It's just crazy. And then to have to fly back from California, our turnaround, I've been stressed a little bit, as much as I ever stress out, which isn't much, but it's been on my, we had to land in California at 7 a.m. on one airline and then be on our next flight by 9 a.m. The problem was we had to go get our bags, exit the airport, go to another terminal, go back into the airport, go back through security, check those bags, do all that. So this whole time I'm like, man, and this was very stupid, but it worked out, thankfully. I based our entire travel plans on the fact that you usually on the flight home from Hawaii, because the winds blow a right direction, gain time in the air than what they allot for it. And that's what we gained. We gained a half hour. And I was like, okay, we made it. That's helpful. So once we made it through that, honestly, the rest of it was fine. This ain't no thing.
I feel like you and I are both doing okay. I mean, I think energy wise here this morning, I was worried we'd both be a little tired. We landed. I think you and
be a little ass dragging on the air today.
I thought so. I think you and I landed in the Wichita airport yesterday around the same time. Maybe about an hour, apart from each other. I'll tell you the one thing that I did not take into account. I told Max this earlier in the day. When you go to Augusta National, you do a lot of walking, and my legs are on fire today. My calves are on fire. I checked my Apple Watch when we were done, when it was all said and done, and I had taken 30,000 steps throughout the day.
What does that equate to in miles?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. I'd have to go back and look it up, but it was a lot. And so my calves are, so every time we've gone to a commercial break, I've tried to not move, because when I stand up and I walk somewhere, I'm limping, my way around to get a cup of coffee or whatever. So it's, that's one thing I did not take into account.
Yeah, I feel you on that. We walk a lot. We go to Hawaii, we walk every day, 3-4 miles. So, but not probably the same
elevation changes. Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I was thinking about you guys as I'm looking at just how many people are there. It's crazy how many, and they limit it, right? It's hard to get in there. And I'm like, man, you're standing there. I mean, how many people do you think were on the playoff hole?
Oh, man.
15,000 people crowded around a green. And like, it was wild.
So we were posted up behind number 16, behind the par three. And we got there extremely early to put chairs down. So we were right next to the ropes, right behind the flag on hole number 16. It was perfect. But as soon as the last group, Rory and Bryson, went through number 16, we packed up our chairs and we just started walking and following them on 17 and 18 and then the playoff hole, but you couldn't see anything. And so, I mean, people are like 20, like it's 25, 30 people deep all the way around the green, all the way basically up the fairway on 18. You know, so it was wild. The sheer number of people, I mean, it took like over an hour to get out of the parking lot when we left. Like it was a lot. There were a lot of people there.
Yeah, it's cool. I what a tournament. It is golf season. Shout out to Crestview Country Club. I know they had a bunch of stuff going for the Masters. We weren't here for it, but it like to me. So we talk about trying to get out and play golf, and you know Crestview's great 36 holes, and once we hit the Masters, that does feel like to me the start of golf season. I don't know if golf people feel the same way. For me, it does though. It's like, all right, we got the Masters in the book. Let's get out there and play a little golf. That's what it's always felt like to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, Crestview, as you mentioned, did a lot of different things with the Masters. And, you know, Crestview is owned by a company that has, you know, a decent amount of golf courses around the country. I think there are maybe 30 some golf courses that the company that owns Crestview owns. There's a golf course in a country club that they own that's maybe 2 miles away from Augusta National. And one really cool thing about Crestview is that if you're a member at Crestview, you can get access to any of their other sister clubs. And so we were there on Saturday. We flew into Atlanta, drove to Augusta. We had quite a bit of time to kill. We went over to, it's called Westlake Country Club, went over to Westlake Country Club and had a beer and watched, you know, some of the third round of action of the Masters. We did. And it was beautiful. Okay, so it was so cool.
That is really cool. So you went out there with another Crestview member. They talk about this all the time. It's never been something. There are these courses all over the country. Yeah. We were last year, we were going to go when we went to NCAA in Omaha. Like we had, because they've got a course up there. I was like, well, I guess let's go play golf. And it was too cold. Like it ended up being like 45 degrees or whatever. So we were like, nah, that doesn't sound like a good use of vacation time. That's awesome that you were able to do that. So you just walk in like you own the place, right? You just fling the doors open and be like, hey.
Well, I mean, kind of like that, because we didn't make any reservations. We didn't talk to anybody. We literally walked in the front doors and we knew what we were going to say, you know, like, hey, we're members at Crestview and we, you know, just wanted to find a place to watch the golf and have a beer. Nobody stopped us. We just posted up at the bar. They didn't say anything. Like, we just enjoyed it. But then we found out, we were talking to some folks there that, and we didn't end up, you know, obviously doing this. We didn't have time, but if you're a member at one of the other clubs, like they'll set you up to play golf there and feed you and you can drink and it's really, really simple. And so not that I'll ever have a chance to do it again, but if you do, if anybody does and you're a member at Crestview Country Club, you can get set up to go play golf at a golf course that's just a couple of miles away from Augusta National.
That's really cool. And one of the great perks there, give Crestview a call. We're going to get some listener opportunities to get out to Crestview and play golf. Maybe with us, maybe just on your own time. We're working on those details, so keep it here for that. But that's really cool. Tommy got to go see the Masters. You can all be jealous. Not just the Masters, but the final round of the Masters, Rory's history. All of that good stuff, all that fun stuff. It was a good way to kick off the golf season to have that happen and have him get there despite almost choking it away again. I couldn't believe it.
He had four.
He really is going to blow this again.
Like a 4-stroke lead with 8 holes to go. And yeah, it was full of drama. I think, you know, I mentioned it at the top of the show. You know, I actually last night when I got home, after we put the kids to bed, I watched the final round. It was the first time I'd been able to actually like watch the back nine of the final round, and the putt that he missed on 18 to make it go to a playoff. I'm like, I had no idea it was so short of a putt. It was a great bunker shot. I knew he was in the bunker and it sounded like he had a pretty good, but I had no idea it was like a 4-footer that he missed. And like I'm watching it for the first time and I'm shocked. But you could tell when he won on that first playoff hole that was like the weight of the world coming off of his shoulders.
Sure.
Right? Like just the sheer emotion. I mean, just incredible. There's nothing else to describe it.
Yeah. And it's been so long and all the expectations put on him early. It's like Sergio, right? All over again, all the close times. But it was good. Let's look ahead to tonight. We got Royals baseball tonight. They play again in New York. It's Waka, Freed pitching matchup, pitching advantage. I mean, I think at this point of the season, you would say goes to the Yankees. Don't you? Like, I don't know how confident you are in Waka this year. I think he's going to be fine. I think I trust that he's going to keep them in almost all the games he pitches in. But I don't like, I think expectations for him have to be a little bit reasonable. So pitching advantage Yankees, they're pretty heavy favorites tonight, actually. But an opportunity there for the Royals offense to wake up a little bit. You hope in that stadium, that's a good time to do it. It's 6:05 first pitch again.
Yeah, what Max Fried does extremely well is the pitch selection, especially as a lefty. You know, it can be pretty deceiving for batters, and he has debuted as a Yankee pretty well. And so that's absolutely going to be a challenge for the Royals tonight. Pitching advantage, Yankees, for sure. And probably hitting advantage, Yankees also. I mean, I'm not surprised that they're a heavy favorite in this game. It's going to be a matter of, you know, Royals being able to get runners on base and not stranding them. And they've got to convert. They've got to take advantage when they get runners on base. I don't care how they do it. I don't care if they're, you know, super patient at the plate and maybe they can get a couple of walks off of Freed. There are a variety of ways to do it, but they have to be able to take advantage when they get runners on base. If they don't, they're not going to win this game tonight.
Well, they got to hit home runs. They got to hit home runs. I mean, that's it. You got to hit home runs, and we'll see if they can do it. I think Waka's got a fine chance. Look, listen, if you're going to give me 2-1 on the Royals to win that game, I haven't had the ability, been in the right time zone to bet in a while. I might take 2-1 with the Royals tonight. 2-1. That's a crazy margin. I wouldn't imagine the Royals play many games at all this year where they're that kind of a dog in baseball. And I'm not a baseball betting expert by any means, but that seems interesting. And then don't forget, you get Shocker baseball tonight against KU and Wichita State baseball. Tommy, like, I don't know how much you guys talked about it last week, is just not performing up to where it needs to be performing right now. Plain simple. There's no way around it. Like, they are not where they need to be.
Yeah, they're not. And that's simply put, has to change.
And it can. I got, that's, you know, that's sort of where, and look, we're trying to be real with it. Like, we're not going to sit here, or at least I'm not, and try to tell you why, because we don't, you know, we're not consuming them that way. But they're 4-8 in the league right now, 12-23 overall for a team that was picked second in the league. Like, yeah, like you got to, there's plenty of time in the conference to get things going. It tells you now, like, getting into the tournament as some sort of at-large is not going to happen now. So can they do something similar to what they did a year ago where they just get really good by the end of it? I'd like to think so. I hope so. But, the big opportunity tonight against Kansas. You know, Kansas has been, I don't know, like, can we say, I don't know what their expectations were going into the year, but they've got to be better than whatever they were. Kansas has been really good. Both Kansas and Kansas State, quite frankly, they've been really good. And they have not played Wichita State this year. So, you know, if you're a Kansas fan out there, there's your chance because they're, you know, playing the Shockers and you can hear it on the radio and all that. But for the Shockers, this is a big time opportunity on the road to try and go get a midweek game. Not that we take too much from midweek games, but for the psychology of the Shockers, see if they can get it done.
Jayhawks are really good. They've been one of the bright spots in college baseball this year. They've been a top 25 team, playing like it for sure.
That'll do it for us on Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Very happy to be back, everybody. It was a nice time away with the family. Very appreciative and fortunate to be able to get out to a really awesome place like Hawaii, which I would highly recommend for anybody that's never been out there. But it's great to be back. Thanks to TJ Cleland, to Brandon Zinner, to Rachel Hallam for filling in while I and Tommy have been away for a few days getting all caught up. But now we're back in the groove. We'll get all the news on the portal. We'll get you ready for the draft. We'll continue to follow the Royals. We're glad to be back. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. No matter who it is, here on Sports Daily, taking you through and getting you ready for your sports day. For Max, for Tommy, for Felix Johnson, I'm
see you tomorrow.